Hello and welcome to the No Ceilings NBA Draft Show. This is a deep dives episode. I'm your host, Nick Agar Johnson, and I am here with my co-host, Paige Otto. Paige, how are you doing this fine evening?
I'm doing great, Nick. It's good to finally be back. I know it's only been a week, but college basketball finally started. Huge performances last night that we're going to talk about at the end of this episode. But yeah, can't complain.
Well, you know, I feel like you could, but you don't have to. It's all good.
Yeah. Other than it's pitch black outside in Michigan at 6 p.m., but we're just going to ignore that for now.
Do our best to ignore that and move on. So, as you mentioned, we will be talking about some of the biggest performances in college basketball at the end of the episode. But one of the two players that we're going to discuss in the deep dives portion of the episode did, in fact, have a big season debut last night. So, one of the two players that we're going to talk about is playing his first game of the season as we record this, so we might not exactly have up-to-date information on that, but let's start with the guy who has, in fact, finished the first game of his college season, and that's Flory Badunga. And obviously the big name for Kansas at this point is Darren Peterson, right? But Flory did actually outscore him in the first game. Now, granted, it was against Green Bay, and Kansas absolutely destroyed them, so there is that element to it, but certainly, Flory is someone who, you know, was one of the top 20 recruits in his high school class and showed some real flashes last year, did not get all that much playing time. Again, you know, we talk about small sample size alert pretty often, and one game is just about the smallest sample size you can get, but so far seems at least likely that he's going to play a larger role this season. And given what he did show in limited minutes last year, there's a lot to like about Badunga's profile going forward. So, Paige, this was your guy for this week. Why did you go with Flory for our third episode here?
Yeah, so I was super excited to bring up Flory just because 2 years ago, I actually had the chance to watch him in the 4A Indiana State Basketball Championships at Gainbridge Fieldhouse. And he played with Kokomo. I think he had like 23 points, 7 rebounds. Obviously, he just looked like the best player on the floor. Kokomo ended up losing in the state championship game, but I've been following his game since the beginning, really. And there's a lot to like with him. He's your typical play finishing, versatile, lob threat, rim running big, right? He's super mobile, has great length, has a huge catch radius with his super long wingspan. He's 6'10", 235 pounds, average 5.9 points, 5.4 rebounds, 0.3 assists, 1.6 blocks, with 2.7 turnovers, average a little over 2 fouls per game, shot 70% from the field, 0% from beyond the arc, with 53.3% from the line, at 1.3 attempts at the line in 16.3 minutes. Obviously, you mentioned he had a smaller role last year with Kansas. He played behind, obviously, Hunter Dickinson and KJ Adams. And this year with Kansas, I'm sure we'll break down his game against Green Bay, but he's basically, you know, this is his breakout year, right? I think I have him at like 22 on my big board, but there's a lot to like with him. I kind of just fall in love with his potential. He's super raw in terms of his shooting and his ball handling. You don't really want him to take more than 2 dribbles. You kind of hold your breath whenever he has to do that. But last year he only had, I believe, one of his game, in his post-up game, he was in the 39th percentile, which is average on synergy. And that's a real concern when you look at your big man. And in the game with Green Bay, I think he showed a massive improvement in terms of sealing off his defenders, taking ownership and getting, positioning. And obviously the 2-man game with him and Darren Peterson is a huge threat this year in college basketball, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. But I really like Flory, especially in terms of he just really intrigues me just because there's so much potential with him, but there's also a lot of things that he lacks in terms of, you know, his shooting ability. He did get to the line 6 times yesterday with Green Bay. He was 5 for 6, which was super encouraging. His shot still looks a little funky, but his follow through, I think, there's a lot of difference from last year. Last year, it kind of seemed like he was like launching it from the line when he got there. But yesterday it looked like he was really, taking the time to actually follow through with intent. rather than last year when he got there. And I really love his touch around the rim. He's very above the rim player. There's a lot of questions in terms of his game below the rim. I kind of get nervous whenever he's outside of the dunker spot and he doesn't really have a face-up game. But yesterday with Green Bay, he definitely showed some patience in that area. Yesterday, if we're going back to last night, because I'm sure the viewers are wanting us to break down that game too. He had 23 points, 6 rebounds, 1 assist, 3 blocks, shot 82% from the field, 83% from the free throw line, which I was the most encouraged about, and only had 3 fouls in 25 minutes and 0 turnovers, may I add, which was a huge improvement because he's not very confident when he's not, you know, in DHOs or in the pick and roll, and kind of when he's spread out, you can kind of see he gets nervous when the ball's in his hand too much, but he's very more than capable of, you know, facing up and going right through guys. He had one of my favorite possessions of the game. Kansas was playing a 5-out offense and he was on the perimeter and he took it straight to the cup in 3-pound dribbles or less and kind of did like a slow arcing Luka-esque move and finished through contact, which was super encouraging because if you looked at it last year, like he would have never have done that. Or was that his role? So that was super encouraging. And also he had some great finishes in transition. I love him in the open floor. I really think he gets down in the court in a hurry. And obviously when you play with a player of Darren Peterson's style, that's going to happen a lot this year. And obviously with Harris's departure and his usage rate going up this year, I think Flory is going to take a really big leap and it's going to be super fun to watch.
So the biggest point from that first game that I wanted to hit on, you already covered extensively, so I won't linger on it too long, but I do want to circle back to the free throw thing because Flory Badunga has a very simple game in a lot of ways. And what he does well, he does spectacularly. I mean, you know, again, the small sample size of this season, there really isn't much point in going through that, but you know, last season, I mean, 95th percentile in terms of offensive efficiency, you know, again, you mentioned the 70% from the floor, right? He's not exactly taking threes, as you already noted, which, you know, does help with that. But anytime you can shoot 70% from the floor, you're doing just fine. And so that sort of leads into really where I'm at with Flory at this point, which is essentially, you know, we talked in each of the last few episodes, I believe, about sort of the notion of one-trick ponies kind of being forced out of the league, right? And so what that, I think, means for Flory Badunga is, look, he can do all the rim-running stuff. He can, you know, finish around the basket very easily. The handle is not quite, you know, up to snuff. But again, there's a big difference in how much that matters when you're a 6'10 defensive big man versus, you know, a 6'5 guard who's going to need to have the ball in their hands a lot, right? So that's certainly an element of it. Again, the, you know, the sample size is way too small to tell if he's made any sort of improvements in terms of his touch from the line. But the fact that he got there 6 times is pretty significant in terms of, you know, you already noted that's more than 4 times as often as he got to the line last season. Will we see that continue against other teams? Who knows? I mean, Kansas's next game is against UNC, which is going to be a very big test for basically everybody involved. But that's really sort of where I'm at with Flory Badunga at this point is, the offense is pretty solidified, and there's one particular detail that I thought was fascinating when digging into the numbers that I want to bring up, but, you know, we'll get to that in a minute. The main thing for me is the offensive role at this point is very simplified. It doesn't need to be more than that unless he can't get to the point where he's up to grade defensively. And, you know, 3 blocks in the opening game, solid performance, you know, 1.5 blocks in very limited minutes last season. He's an incredible athlete. You know, he's got the long wingspan, as you mentioned. The fouling is not, there's a whole large realm between how, you know, how good the elite guys are at avoiding fouls. Like, you know, we talked about Magoon Gwak and the fact that he had significantly more blocks than fouls. That's not something you see often from young bigs. So it's not like, you know, that ratio is off in a sense of I'm worried about Badunga being the kind of guy who jumps at everything. But, you know, it is certainly something worth noting that if he's going to go in that first round range, like you mentioned, you have him on your board, that will be after he is sort of proven more on the defensive end in particular. Because, again, I don't see him, you know, taking a ton of jumpers this year. The fact that he took literally two last year per synergy is pretty indicative of where he's at with that part of his game. But again, I mean, if you're finishing 70% from the floor and you're, you know, 95th percentile offensive efficiency because you're just, you know, throwing down everything you can get your hands on around the basket, you know, you mentioned the wide catch radius. The offensive role is pretty clear. And the main question for me is just, can he get to a point where he's so good defensively that you're okay with, you know, it's not that he takes things off the table. It's more just that, you know, the versatility that we talked about with Gwath and Alex Condon of, hey, they can be a pick and roll guy. They can be a pick and pop guy. They're, you know, particularly in Condon's case, more than Gwath's case, they're someone who you can rely on as a playmaking hub as a big man. I mean, Batum averaged 0.3 assists per game last season, right? That's not, the playmaking is not really part of his game. The shooting touch is not really part of his game. And so then for me, what it comes down to is he will have to do an awful lot defensively just because any team that plays him is going to need him to be the guy at the dunker spot because he does that exceptionally well, and that's a credit to him, but there isn't much versatility in his offensive game at this point.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's kind of going to come down to, like, he is a productive offensive rebounder and a shot blocker. I think he had, 54 blocks, which I believe was, yeah, he led Kansas with 54 blocks and was third in the Big 12 last year. But he
and that's in 16 minutes a game.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's insanely impressive, right? And that's only going to increase this year. But there's still questions of, you know, obviously they played Green Bay and he wasn't really tested, and especially in the post-up. So, like, you know, him ceiling, yes, it's a encouraging sign, but what is he going to do when he's, you know, the likes of, you know, Koa Pete or, you know, top draft prospects that he's going to go against in the post that obviously have more strength and mobility and obviously have a better offensive game than, you know, the likes of Green Bay that we saw, right? I just want him to get challenged more and see how he responds. And in terms of, you know, I think you mentioned, his defensive capability, like he has to be more than a shot blocker. And then I do like him in terms of his mobility when he kind of gets kicked off the dunker spot. And I do think he can be a switchable defender if needed. He does have the ability to have hard closeouts. But then he kind of, you know, kind of trips up when he has to recover quickly and kind of gets beat to the rim a lot as well. So I just think he needs to, you know, act with confidence because Kansas is going to heavily rely on him down low. And he had a lot of turnovers, when he kind of has this thing that he does where if he doesn't catch the ball perfectly, he kind of gets really sped up, below the rim, and he gets a lot of defenders that strip the ball away from him. And then that just causes, you know, chaos running back, and him trying to recover from that. So I would like to see him improve in that sense because he obviously has gained strength from last year. His usage rate is obviously going to, increase this year. But, I think the big thing with him is that what more can he do than, you know, the play finishing, the shot blocking, the pick and roll game? And I think just improving that, you know, if we saw, you know, a little face up possessions here and there that show his versatility on the offensive end, but also on the defensive end where he can guard that efficiently and effectively, I think that could go a long way for front offices and scouts as well.
I'm really glad you mentioned the confidence because I think that's something that scouts almost exclusively talk about when it comes to shooting. And that's not the only element of it, right? And, you know, yeah. I think for me, a significant part of just the general notion of confidence in a player is, you know, in terms of making quick decisions, right? If you don't have that confidence, you're going to hesitate and suddenly 0.5 seconds becomes 1 second. And, you know, I haven't used this line this year, even though I use it 7,000 times a year. So this is the first time I'm breaking it out for this year. But, you know, anything in college basketball that is a matter of feet in the NBA is a matter of inches. And so, you know, the hesitation, it's a problem at all levels when you're not making quick decisions, but it becomes even more of an issue the higher levels you go up to. And so certainly, you know, his confidence in terms of his volume from the first game shooting wise, you know, that's a good sign that he's willing to at least take those looks. But, you know, again, the confidence is going to be an issue. You know, there's also the other point that you mentioned of the switchability, and that's huge for his defensive profile because, you know, as much of an NBA-ready frame as he has, he's a 6'10 tweener. And, you know, yeah. the discussion of tweener has moved over the course of the last couple of decades from, you know, essentially 3-4 being the tweener to really now it's 4-5 being the tweener, right? Of you need to shoot and handle the ball at a relatively high level to be a 4 in the modern NBA. And so anybody who can't do that is essentially locked into being a 5. But, you know, Bethune's 6'9", 6'10", right? He's, you know, certainly in terms of the frame at 235, he's going to, you know, have a wider frame than a lot of the bigs he's facing off against. But, you know, when you talk about the true behemoths, right, he's going to need to switch at a level that teams can think of him as, okay, this is like our free safety guy who we can sort of switch across positions defensively rather than this is going to have to be our primary guy under the basket. I am very curious about what Kansas's next game looks like because there's a pretty big upgrade from Green Bay's front court to Caleb Wilson, Henry Vissar, and Jaren Stevenson down low. And that's going to be a pretty significant test. And, you know, with Vissar in particular, I mean, his ability to, you know, space and pass as a big man, those are the kinds of things that Bedunga will have to cover that is not necessarily the kind of big man you see often at the college level, but is increasingly more and more the kind of versatile big man, especially offensively, that you'll see at the NBA level. So that'll be a fascinating guard for him. There is one sort of element of his offense that I'm curious for your thoughts on, which I was stunned when I looked at Florey Badunga's numbers from last year and saw just how infrequently he got out in transition, because he does really well when he gets out there, but he had 18 transition possessions all last season, which per synergy ranked in the 16th percentile in terms of frequency. And normally when you see, you know, an athlete who gets out of the open floor like Badunga, you expect a lot of their finishes to be in transition. And it's weird for me to kind of weigh, because on the one hand, him being as incredibly effective in the half court as he is a really good sign. On the other hand, I am confused about how he did not get more transition opportunities last year. And, you know, again, ridiculously small sample size, but only one of his looks last night was counted as being in transition. So I'm wondering if that's, you know, something that leads into the confidence thing, as you mentioned, of, you know, him not having his hand up calling for the ball. But, you know, certainly it's the kind of thing where when you talk about how well he moves up and down the floor, you'd expect him to be someone who gets those opportunities more often in transition.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a confidence thing in terms of, you know, he only started, I believe, 6 games last year. And I think he struggled with what his role was last year in limited minutes. I think he kind of had the mindset of like, hey, like when I get in the game, I'm here to finish plays. I'm here to, you know, play effectively in the pick and roll. I'm here to block shots. I'm here to do whatever is needed, which is like, wouldn't that translate to him, you know, running effectively in the open court as much as possible? And it clearly didn't. But when he did, obviously he ranked in the excellent category in transition. But as you mentioned, it's a small sample size. And I think, you know, with the likes of Harris, that he definitely had a lot of opportunities to, you know, finish in transition and have easy looks and get rewarded. So that's definitely a question mark in terms of, you know, why didn't he have more? And I think that is just due to what his role was with Kansas. And just to mention too, like in 550 minutes, he had 48 dunks. And I mentioned that just because, you know, I think he's growing in terms of what his all around game can be. And I think last year it was kind of a learning wave because he had to play, under, you know, Hunter Dickinson, where he was kind of the mastermind in terms of the playmaking big. And kind of one of the main scorers for Kansas, and kind of took a lot of Florey's plate, but that's now on Florey's plate to deliver in terms of that sense. So, and Kansas too, with Hunter, you know, having a playmaking big, opens up so much for the offense. And I think Florey can definitely, you know, improve in that area. Obviously, he had one assist last night. But last year, you know, he only averaged, you know, I believe, what was it, like 1.7 or maybe I'm thinking, or 0.3 assists.
Yeah. He had 11 total.
He had 11 total.
We're about to talk about.
Yeah. So with Dickinson obviously not being there anymore, I think we're going to see a different Florey Badunga in just terms of he's going to look for those looks a lot more. And especially he plays so well in the short role too, that a lot of those opportunities are going to come, I think, easier than he thinks. And I think he's going to deliver just a little bit more than last year. Obviously, I'm not asking him to have like 2 to 3 assists per game, but definitely if he can get to, you know, 1 to 2, I think that would be a really, you know, check mark in terms of, you know, his vision and what else he can bring to the table than just being a play finishing above the rim type of player. And that kind of goes with what I mentioned. If he has more face up opportunities, you know, he's more patient in the short roll and the high pick and roll. I would like to see him, you know, play more in those delay actions, which I definitely think he could be a great asset in the likes of playing off Darren Peterson. But yeah, it just, you know, there's a lot of question marks, and we can't really go off a lot since last night, but it's definitely encouraging with the question marks I did have last year that he started off the season in such a high standard.
Yeah, as many question marks as there may be, I just want to loop back to sort of where we began, which is essentially what he does well, he does exceptionally well. And really the main question is just, can he add enough, you know, more on the offensive end, I would argue, than the defensive end, but, you know, can he add enough? Well, sorry, I flipped that. Can he add enough that, you know, it's a situation where he can do enough else that he's not that sort of one trick pony that we've talked about? And I think there's plenty of reason to be optimistic, especially in terms of the defensive stuff, the switchability. He's got the athleticism for it. It's more just a matter of A, how he's used scheme wise defensively, but, you know, B, and more to the point, can he continue to be as impressive a shot blocker as he is while minimizing the fouling? Because, you know, again, it's the kind of thing where you don't want him to be tentative. You know, as you mentioned, you want him to be, you know, taking tries at shot blocking, but there's a very fine line between, you know, being an aggressive defender and being an overly aggressive defender. And certainly I think, you know, given the tentativeness concerns that we've mentioned, probably be better for him to land on the side of, you know, being a little bit more aggressive. And we'll see how that plays out over the course of the season.
Yeah. And one thing real quick before we move on to, I think because he is such a good rebounder too, he had a 22.9% defensive rebounding rate. He could have a lot of looks, you know, with head-to-head passes. And I think that's one area of his game that it's not much to ask for. And I think that's definitely what I would like to see just a little bit more this year with his usage rate obviously going up. He's already such a huge presence there, and also put back opportunities too. I think he can definitely improve upon, and just, you know, showing us that he can, you know, hang with the big dogs per se down low, and just show off his versatility even more.
All right. Shall we move on to player number 2?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Okay, so I'm going to throw you a curveball here because I want to get your thoughts before I give mine on the player that I chose for this week, because I still don't know if I'm out on an island on Oteka Owe or not. When we started this episode, the Kentucky Nickel State game was in the first half and Owe's stat line was not looking great. I refreshed the page and he's doing much better in the second half, so that's a good sign, but for all of you listening, this is mid Kentucky's opening game, so we don't know what the final line looks like for Oteka Owe. But yeah, Paige, I'm curious for your thoughts, because again, I don't know how far out there I am on my Oteka Owe evaluation.
Yeah, I think I'm going to refresh the page because my browser is not working. Must be my Wi-Fi. 1 second.
And we thought I was going to be the one having Wi-Fi problems coming in.
I know why this is not refreshing. 1 second. You need to play like the Jeopardy.
I'm not going to sing it live on air. I'm sorry. I don't have a clip for it either.
Yeah, I think when I did see, it's still not refreshing, but what does he have right now?
So at the moment, he has 13 points. Okay. He's hit half looks like 4 of 9 from the field. See if I can do some quick math here. 4 of 9 from the field, 4 of 5 from the free throw line, which means survey 1-3. So he's 1 for 2 from 3.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that's super encouraging in terms of, you know, he hit 1-3 because with him, you know, when you think of him, he's a tenacious defender that has that playmaking ability, but also, is really good in the pick and roll and kind of, you know, he's going to take a lot of, on to with, you know, I saw Kentucky starting lineup, you know, he's being the point guard tonight, which usually he is the 2 guard. So he's going to have a lot more on his plate than last year, playing with obviously Butler, Kobe Brea. So I'm excited to watch this game later. But I think the big question with, Otega is kind of like, can his shooting ability translate? And with his shot, you know, I have questions about his shot. His shot is very contorted in a way. It's kind of inverted and it takes a long time to get off, especially when he's off the catch, right? So with him being, you know, 6'4", 225 pounds, I believe the last time I checked. Yeah. He has such a, you know, big frame for, a 2 guard. He kind of has that Jared McCain, you know, stocky build that, you know, he's kind of, what you want to see, with, undersized point guards that, you know, have that frame and can kind of hold their own in the sense. And he can also, switch. He can play multiple positions on the defensive end, which not a lot of undersized guards can. And with him having such, high hopes for this year, you know, he's SEC preseason player of the year. And obviously with, his 2 seasons at Oklahoma, he got off to a huge hot start, with Oklahoma. And then he kind of fell off the radar for a little bit because of his inconsistencies there with his shot. I believe he shot like 25%, and then shot this past year with Kentucky, around 35.5%. Correct me if I'm wrong, but definitely, when you look at his, assist numbers, the same thing with his turnover rate. You know, he's improving consistently year after year, which is a super encouraging sign. I think his his second year at Oklahoma, I believe Metcalf and you were super, super high on him to start the year. And that, obviously kind of, you know, dipped and dive a little bit. But I think this year at Kentucky, there's a lot on his shoulders and it's kind of, you know, can he deliver? Right. But if you value, you know, athleticism, physicality, defense, especially in your 2 guards, then, you know, you're on the Otega train. Right. So, I think this game is gonna, you know, just like, you know, it's such a small sample size, but you get excited when you see a big game for a player draft prospect that you're high on, right? It kind of gives you a little pep in the step for the season instead of, you know, starting off the season with like a, you know, bad taste in your mouth. It's kind of like, oh, like Condon, for example, you know, he didn't have the best performance last night, which we will talk about later, but it kind of, you know, doesn't start off the season like you hope for. But just, I'm sure you'll go over the numbers too, but last year he, averaged 16.2 points per game, 1.7 assists, 1.5 turnovers, 4.7 rebounds. And I love his rebounding ability because that is one of the best, traits that translates to the NBA. And I was a huge Jared McCain fan and the same thing. He had such a high rebounding rate for the same stature as Otega. And, it just really shows that, you know, if you can get rebounding abilities off your guard, it just opens up so much for everyone that, he just, you know, he has no problem, you know, getting in there and grabbing a rebound and, you know, just going with it. Which when you're looking at his game too, he shot 60.5% at the rim. I really like how strong and confident he is getting there. And he just has that fearlessness about him that he has such a tight handle with the ball when he only has like 2 or 3 dribbles. But when he's attacking the rim, there's not like a question mark if, you know, if he's going to make the wrong decision or, you know, speed things up a lot. I really like how he attacks there. And he had 47 dunks on the year, only missed 4, which is super encouraging when you're an undersized guard. And when we talk about the defensive end, I love how he disrupts passing lanes. He has really good instincts when making those judgment calls. Obviously, when you're looking at Otega 2, you know, you're kind of like, oh, that he only averaged 1.7 assists last year. But if you look at the previous 2 years at Oklahoma, he's only improved that. So 11.3 assist percent. He only had a 2.8% assist rate his first year at Oklahoma, and then 8.4% his second year. And then when you look at his turnover rate, that's only gone down as well. So I'm curious, Nick, what your thoughts on him are since you chose him. And I don't know if I'm ranting or not, but I really like his game overall.
No, not at all. I am really glad that you brought up the developmental trajectory for him, because that is precisely why I wanted you to go first. Because the part that confused me the most about OA last season was, you know, as you mentioned, he got off to a really, really hot start his sophomore year at Oklahoma. He had, you know, like 50%+ from 3-point range. And then he cooled off pretty dramatically as the year went along, and he sort of fell off draft radars. And, you know, again, to me, it feels like he kind of stayed off draft radars when, you know, from my perspective, he improved by leaps and bounds last season. I mean, you know, this is a guy who, you know, you mentioned the assist percentage. What stands out to me is this is a guy who was a dramatically negative assist to turnover guy his first 2 years in college. And this past season, you know, he had a positive assist to turnover ratio, which, again, you know, when you're a 6'4 guard, you want that to be a little bit more than barely positive. But I mean, just in terms of the growth that he has had as a playmaker, as someone who can create things for others, I mean, you mentioned the defense and the steals in particular. He's always been exceptional as a turnover generator, as a chaos creator kind of defensive player. But really, you know, in that sophomore year at OU, it was like, okay, can he continue to shoot this well? No, he isn't. Oh, well, you know, sort of drop this guy off the back of radars. I mean, last year, you know, just sort of reading some of the numbers across the board, I mean, you know, points per game went up by almost 5 per game. But to me, what really stands out is, yeah, his 3-point percentage dipped slightly, you know, from 38% his sophomore year to 36% last year. The 38% was buoyed by an incredibly hot start to the season and a pretty small sample size. Last year, he shot more from 3-point range than he had the year before. His frequency of free throw attempts jumped dramatically. I mean, he went from 3.5 per game to 5.5 per game, and he only played like 3.5 more minutes per game, right? It wasn't just that he went from, you know, sort of rotation player to, you know, big part of the lineup. It's like he started all but 4 games of his sophomore year at OU. He started every game for Kentucky last season, but, you know, it's just across the board, right? I mean, his volume through 3-point range increased, his free throw volume went up dramatically, and percentage wise, he went from 64% to 78% last season. And, you know, as of the middle of his first game, he's at 80% from the free throw line. So hopefully that's a trend that continues. But really, for me, you know, the thing with Otega Owe was his sophomore year, he was a defensive specialist who had a really hot run from 3-point range. And then he fell off and people thought, oh, okay, the 3-point shooting is a mirage. And last year, again, the percentage was lower, but he was much more consistent, you know, from beginning of the year to the end of the year. The volume increased, the volume from the free throw line increased, and the percentage increase from the free throw line is, you know, I've mentioned on this podcast many times before that I consider myself a partial free throw truther. And, you know, this is one of those situations where, again, the 3-point volume is larger in his junior year than it was in his sophomore year. But really, the more dramatic increase was his frequency from the free throw line. But also, every season, the sample size from the free throw line for him has been significantly larger than the 3-point sample size. And the fact that he improved as much as he did from the line last year, to me, indicates, okay, this is someone who, you know, had a really hot start to his sophomore year. And now in his junior year, he's started to sort of solidify some of those things that, you know, made him as potent as he was. And so for me, you know, I have OA as an end of the first round guy, but as a first round guy, because, you know, when I first, you know, thought of him as a prospect, it was, okay, this is a really impressive defensive specialist who, can he do enough with the ball in his hands to be an effective guard in the modern NBA? You know, he's not a point guard, right? But can he do enough with the ball in his hands that he can get playing time as a 6'4 off guard? And, you know, again, the fact that he showed as much improvement as a decision maker on the offensive end as he did is incredibly encouraging. And I think there's just, you know, he popped onto radars during his sophomore year a lot more than I thought he did last year. But I thought what he showed last year was really establishing himself in a lot of the ways that, you know, it feels like he'd sort of fallen off radars. And I just was confused by why he wasn't getting back on radars, because everything that you could have hoped for him to do last season, he did, and quite successfully at that.
Yeah, I think with him too, as you mentioned, like when I say he's a playmaker, he's a defensive playmaker. He had like a 3.1% steal rate, which is, you know, you don't really want him to control the play, right? You're not going to look at him to be your main point guard, but he's a great off ball guard to have. You know, he's going to be capable of, you know, defending multiple positions, you know, disrupting passing lanes, setting up for others in that sense, which, you know, you kind of want that. You don't really want, you know, him taking control of, you know, getting to his shot and like, his teammates setting him up a lot. That's not really his, you know, bread and butter, but definitely he's continued to improve year after year after year. And I think that's a quality that kind of goes, you know, under the radar a little bit, in terms of, you know, anything really, especially it's a hard thing to do, right? And I think he's just a very consistent player that I think is gonna garnish a lot of attention in terms of him being a true, you know, you mentioned you have him in the first round. I think I have him maybe a little bit out of the first round. I have to check, but I definitely think he could certainly get up there for me. I just want, you know, him to improve on the offensive end, especially with his shot, and just have more confidence in that area, because with him being such an on-ball offensive player, he's going to be open a lot, and he and I want him to have more possessions than just, you know, his first instinct is, you know, I got to get to the rim, right? He shot 60.5% at the rim, and he has such good body control for an undersized guard that he is really adaptive when in terms of, you know, finishing through contact and going to the rim in traffic. I just think, you know, off the catch, I would like him just be more confident in his shot. You know, his shot, I mentioned it earlier, but his shot is just a little wonky a little bit. And I just want it to be more confident and just smoother and for, you know, all of, and if you look at, you know, the rest of his game, it's very consistent and smooth. The only thing that's missing is like, he's already undersized. Yes, he can defend. Yes, he can disrupt on the defensive end of the ball. That's not a question in anyone's eyes, but can he, you know, provide that value, you know, in the 2-point range? You mentioned, you know, his free throw rate has gone up year after year, which is super encouraging. And I think with him too, with, you know, him probably going to be playing a little bit more at the lead point guard spot, I think a lot of that's going to open up for him as well, especially in the pick and roll. But I'm curious for you, Nick, do you have any concerns with him playing point guard? Because it seems like Mark Pope is, you know, certainly not afraid to throw him in that role. And that kind of just goes back to, you can count on him as a player, because he is so consistent in everything else that he does. But I think with this Kentucky team, just, you know, going into college basketball as a whole, they have a $22 million roster, which is, I believe, the highest in all of college basketball, right? So in terms of, you know, that, you know, there's a lot riding on this whole season, you know, if you're going to spend that much money, can it, you know, end in a national championship? So a lot is on his shoulders, not, you know, if you're not counting, you know, his consistency year after year, but can he be that player for Kentucky with, you know, the more usage that he's going to play at the one spot, which he really isn't used to, and just how he can respond, because he's been, you know, responding the past three seasons. And I think he really knows that this year is kind of not a make or break year for him. But I think he's really, trying to, show scouts, front offices, that he can absolutely do enough on the offensive end when he has the ball in his hands more than he did last year.
So certainly this is a great opportunity for him to establish himself. I hope I'm remembering this correctly, but I'm pretty sure it was Stephen Gillespie, our colleague who I talked about this with last year, of the, I think also with Maven Grubel on a separate podcast, but the notion that a lot of times it's really helpful for players who are going to be role players at the NBA level to have the experience being the lead guy. And, you know, it's something that I think it's easy to forget that basically every single NBA player was not only the best player on their high school team, but the best player on every team that they played on up until the point where they got to the NBA. And always a fascinating case because he's not that kind of player, right? You know, he started out being a bit player for Oklahoma during his freshman year, you know, had that breakout moment in his sophomore year, but still for the most part was not the head of the snake offensively. And then, you know, last season he took a huge leap in terms of offensive responsibilities and, you know, just putting the ball in the basket more often for Kentucky than he had in either of his 2 years at Oklahoma. So I think it's very helpful for his development for him to have the ball in his hands and to get that kind of experience because, again, you know, once he gets to the NBA level, you know, even though I have him as a late first round guy, which is higher than most, I'm not expecting Otega Owe to be a 30 point a game scorer at any point in his NBA career because he wasn't a 20 point a game scorer in college, right? So it's like, you know, okay, that's not, you know, that's not the role that I expect him to fill. The role I expect him to fill is, okay, you know, he's going to be a defense first rotation piece. And then again, you know, the question goes back to, can he do enough sort of point guard side of the combo guard equation, right? Like, can he do enough of the ball handling? Can he do enough playmaking for others on the offensive end in addition to his exceptional playmaking on the defensive end? And, you know, again, it's the kind of thing where it's throwing him into the fire a bit, but, you know, oftentimes I think that tends to, if you're looking at it purely from a long-term view, I think that tends to work out better than people think it does. I mean, you know, part of it is something that you're very familiar with as a Suns fan of Devin Booker's first year being the point guard for Phoenix did not look pretty, but him getting that experience was, you know, huge for his development in all the years after that. And, you know, he doesn't have his 27-7 year if he doesn't get those on ball reps when the team around him is god awful, but, you know, he's at least sort of thrown into the fire that way. It's a bit different being thrown into the fire at the NBA level versus at the college level, but, you know, in terms of what we saw from OA on the ball last season, again, you know, a barely positive assist to turnover ratio is not what you hope for out of your point guard, but he's not going to be a point guard, right? He's not someone who, you know, there's a whole different bar for primary initiator, you know, lead offense guys in the NBA than there is for complementary role player types of, it's not a matter of can you do everything? It's a matter of can you do enough? And so last season to me was encouraging. You know, it would be great to see more growth from him in that area moving forward. But I think really for me, the main thing is that he did a significant portion of that work last season to go from, you know, someone who you didn't want to have making plays for others to someone who, you know, yeah, he's not going to throw Luka passes anytime soon, but just him getting more comfortable on the ball, him being able to get more comfortable with, okay, you know, maybe I'm not running the offense, but if the ball swings my way, you know, flip side of what we were talking about with Badunga, right? Can I make a quick decision that's a good decision? And I think that him getting those point guard reps this season will be a huge part of him continuing on that growth trajectory. But I mean, he showed last season already that he was on the upswing in that regard. I mean, he turned the ball over more in his sophomore year than he had assists this past season. That's a pretty significant jump for someone who, as you mentioned, he had 5 assists his entire freshman year. And, you know, granted, he was only playing 13 minutes a game, but 5 is, you know, as iffy as Badunga's low assist numbers from his freshman year were, it's a whole different ballgame when you're talking about a 6'10 athletic big man versus a 6'4 guard who doesn't quite shoot well enough to be sort of your AJ Green archetype or the example I've always used in the past, the Troy Daniels archetype, right? That's not what OA is going to be for you. So he needs to get to a pretty high floor in terms of the rest of his skill set. And the fact, again, that last year he started going down that path is, I think, a huge positive sign for where he can be going forward. Again, he doesn't need to be a, you know, point guard's point guard, but any reps that he can get in terms of improving those areas of his game, I think will be huge for when he's at a point where, you know, he's not asked to lead the offense, but he is asked to make quick, good decisions.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, variables in terms of, you know, can I throw, you know, this guy in the fire and am I confident that he can respond? I think that says a lot about, you know, his character, his, you know, the confidence that coaches, obviously Mark Pope, has in him, and how they can respond. You know, you mentioned Devin Booker, obviously, as a Suns fan, I was, you know, I'm glad you brought that up. But like, if you look at Cooper Flagg too, you know, he's gotten reps at the point guard position too, in the NBA. And that's not, a lot of people, you know, don't have delayed gratification in this sense. In terms of, you know, oh, this, you know, he's not a point guard, you know, he's not a center. Why is he playing this? It's because, you know, in the game of basketball, it's always developing. And the more that a player can, you know, respond in unlikely circumstances, like Owe will, this year with Kentucky, it just goes to show, what type of player they can become. And being a glue guy at the NBA level, you know, that's how you win championships, when you have those type players around your stars. And if you look at, you know, obviously the Oklahoma City Thunder with, you know, Lu Dort, Cason Wallace, and he kind of reminds me a little bit of Lu Dort, just his frame and size and his defensive capability. Obviously, he doesn't have the shot-making ability that Lu Dort has, but just the frame and the tenacious ability kind of reminds me of him in a way. But I think that's definitely a skill and kind of a concept that not gets forgotten, but isn't talked about enough, is that it just shows his versatility as a player. And there's a lot of other circumstances that, you know, aren't likely, but I'm sure, you know, in a few games from now, when, you know, he's played the point guard position, if he does end up playing multiple games at that one spot, people are gonna be like, oh my god, he should have been point guard this whole time. Like, it's just, you know, a thing in terms of when you're talking about basketball in any sport. It's just, people aren't, you know, reluctant to, they're not good with change, right? So, when something is changed and they're not used to it, it kind of, you know, gives a sense of, you know, not freak out, but just the uncertainty of it. But I think he definitely will do well at the one spot, just because he's such a consistent, reliable player. And I'm super excited to see how he continues to improve this year.
I'll go with another classic no ceilings cliche. Development is not linear. There are going to be bumps in the road when you throw anyone who doesn't have experience, you know, even on the most basic human level. If you've never done something before and you do it for the first time, you're not going to be great at it right away. Like, no matter, well, I mean, unless you're Shohei Ohtani, but, you know, other than Shohei Ohtani, if you try something that you've never done before, you're not going to be great at it right away. But, you know, the flip side of that is, again, given the growth that Owe showed last season in terms of purely his offensive playmaking, because we're on the same page with how exceptional of a defensive playmaker he is, but purely in terms of the offensive playmaking, like, yeah, you know, if you take someone who has been an off-ball player their entire college career and say, okay, you're our point guard now, good luck. You know, there are going to be bumps in the road for sure. But where it ends up is, okay, Mark Pope is trusting him to be the point guard. That's, you know, first of all, that's a good sign. As much as development isn't linear, you know, looking at his shooting numbers, those have been on a pretty sharp upward trajectory since the start of his first year, right? And that's the kind of thing where, look, I'm not in the Kentucky locker room. I do not know Otega Owe personally, but, you know, just in terms of looking at the statistical evidence points to, this is someone who's put in a lot of work in not only just, you know, their basketball development, but in the specific areas in which he needed to improve, right? Like, if he went from 1.5 steals a game to 2 steals a game from his sophomore to his junior year, great. That's an improvement, but he was already excellent at that. The fact that he's shown this kind of, you know, I'm going to go back to the well with one of my old favorites again, but, you know, similar to Deron Holmes' shooting development, right? Of, okay, this is someone who recognizes what it is about their game that really works and what it is about their game that they need to grow to be the kind of player that they want to be. And with Owe, I mean, just across the board, you know, he has continued to be as good of a defensive playmaker as he always was, right? It's not the sort of offense for defense effort thing that we see with a lot of players, right? He's not he's not slacking on the defensive end because he suddenly has a lot more offensive responsibility. But, you know, it's been a slow and steady improvement. And so part of the reason I, you know, have been unsure about my evaluation of Oe is, again, you know, I said this already, but I think it bears repeating. I don't know what he could have shown last year that he didn't show that would have been what people wanted to see, right? Like, okay, yeah, if he shot 45% from three all of a sudden, great, right? But just in terms of reasonable improvements that people could have expected, he took a significant leap in terms of on-ball scoring responsibility. He took a significant leap in terms of offensive playmaking for others. He continued to be as great of a defender as he was. His rebounding rate went up pretty significantly as well. Like, I don't know what he could have shown last year that would have made people change their opinions on him. And the fact that he got so much more attention his sophomore year than last year is what's sort of throwing me for a loop. Because, again, you know, he fell off radars when he cooled off during his sophomore year. But anything that you could have wanted to see from him last season at Kentucky, he did. And certainly given the responsibility of him, you know, starting out as the point guard for Kentucky, that's another whole level of responsibility. And if he can live up to that and continue on his upward trajectory, then, you know, it's a similar thing to the argument that I and you and many No Ceilings people made about Dee Clifford last season. Like, yeah, okay, sure, he's a senior. He's an older prospect who, you know, isn't this superstar in any one particular area. But, like, what kind of role player things would you want Otega Oe to do that he hasn't either already shown at a very high level or at a minimum shown consistent improvement in that area?
Yeah. I think we're in this day and age, too, that people just want, well, he's a two guard. He should be shooting 38% from three. He should be having, you know, four assists per game. And that's just not the type of player he is, right? And I think with any success, there has to be failures. And of course, any prospect is going to, you know, have some bummy games, if you will, you know, across the season. But it's kind of like how you respond and play. And Otega Oe is a player that responds, you know, game after game, season after season. And if you just look, you know, from 2 years ago to now, he definitely is going to make improvements this year. And just looking at game just ended, Nick. But he had 13 points, three rebounds, zero assists, one steal, three turnovers, 4 of 9 from the field, 1 of 2 from three, and was 4 of 5 from the line. So, and 2 fouls. So if not the greatest performance in terms of what we were talking about that we wanted him to improve on, definitely the 0 to 3, assist to turnover ratio isn't the best, but I'm sure we'll watch the game, later, but definitely not what we hope for in terms of, you know, playing the likes of, you know, Nicholas. But, you know, we'll see how it goes for the next season. But definitely not the best start at the point guard position for him.
I don't know what you're talking about. 50% from 3-point range, 80% from the free throw line. What more could you ask for? We can ignore the rest of that.
I know. I'm such a downer.
Yeah. How dare you, honestly. Anyway, shall we move on to our quick hits, puddle jumps, and close this out?
Yeah, let's do it.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
All right, so before we wrap things up, just sort of a brief overview. As we are recording this on Tuesday night, college basketball season officially started yesterday. So you know, as mentioned, some players have already played their first game. Some players finished their first game while we were live on air recording this podcast. But, you know, what has stood out to you the most through the first couple of games-ish of the college season?
Yeah, I think the big headliner was obviously Florida against Arizona in the Hall of Fame series. And everyone's talking about Koa Pete. You know, they're calling him the next Paolo Banchero, which is, you know, a hefty name to live up to. But if you look at, you know, the box score, 30 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 3 steals, 1 block. He had the best freshman debut in Arizona history. And I think I saw a stat that he was the second highest points in freshman ever. I forget who it was behind, but
probably Wilt with like 73.
Yeah. But there's a lot of Koa Pete fans. I know Nathan's a huge Koa Pete fan, and was blowing up the group chat last night, watching his performance, but he definitely, you know, not surprised a lot of us, but definitely answered a lot of questions for us in terms of he just absolutely dominated. He also had a dunk of the year candidate early on. And he's just so smooth in the mid range and so patient. And as a freshman, he plays like a 18-year-old senior. that's how I describe his game. He's just so disruptive in terms of he's so confident in what he can do, and he's absolutely gonna, you know, take it to you. I know you're a huge Condon fan. We talked about him last episode. Wasn't his best performance, and not a good performance overall for the defending national champs either. But definitely his performance definitely stood out. AJ DeBansa, Darren Peterson, the big three, had 20 plus point games. Darren had 4 rebounds, 3 assists, was 7-11 from the field. Caleb Wilson, 22 points. Darius Acuff, I cannot talk. It's late. 22 points, 4 assists. Malik Thomas, I know we have a lot of fans. I know Rucker's a huge fan of him. And also, Auburn almost lost yesterday. And then Boise State got upset by a D2 Hawaii school. So a lot of fun and exciting times. And you never know what you can get when the college basketball season starts, but definitely a lot of great freshman debuts. I forget who tweeted it out, but I thought it was funny. It was like X thinks there's like 57 first round picks after the first night of college basketball, which is so true. I mean, my feed was just like every guy could be number one.
Yeah.
And it's just everyone's just happy to have college basketball back. And I think if you look at the flip side of the Florida game, Xavier Lee, Boogie Flan didn't have the best game, but he did make a layup, a few of them. yeah, I think definitely there's a lot of question marks if you're a Florida fan in terms of, you know, your front court, but definitely encouraging if you're a Koa Pete fan.
Yeah, I was going to start with Koa Pete as well. And I think, you know, it leads into a couple of things that we've talked about today. Obviously, Darren Peterson had his debut in the same game that Florida Dunga played because, you know, they're on the same team, as we already talked about, right? But there's a big difference in having a huge debut game against Green Bay or against Nichols, right? Versus Koa Pete had his debut against the reigning national champion. And they have a front court with at least one, probably two, maybe three NBA players, depending on how you feel about Thomas Houck, Alex Condon, and Micah Hanlockton. But, you know, again, it's a big difference when you have that 37-5-3 debut against the reigning national champion versus, yeah, you know, not to be unkind, but let's be honest here, a cupcake, right? Like, you know, Kansas did not book Green Bay expecting that to be a particularly close game. Whereas, you know, Arizona, Florida is like, okay, this is the marquee game, right, of the opening of the college season. And not only was it the marquee game, but, you know, and not only was it against the reigning national champions, it was against the reigning national champions who have an incredibly loaded front court, and Koa Pete was just taking them to school all night. So the fact that he did not attempt a jump shot is, you know, maybe not something you want to see in the long term, but if you can put up 37-5-3 against that front court, maybe you don't need to. Right. And, you know, him getting to the line 12 times as well, that's a huge part of whether he's going to be as effective as people hope he can be going forward, just continuing to get the line. Because when you're as impossible to stop of a downhill force as Coa Pete is, just getting to the line constantly is going to be a huge part of your scoring. So, you know, again, no shots from outside of like 3 feet and 8 of 12 from the free throw line. You know, those are the nits that you would pick, right? But the flip side of that is it wasn't just an exceptionally impressive, you know, historically impressive rookie debut. It was also that he was doing it against maybe the single toughest matchup that any of these freshmen faced on their opening night. So I was extraordinarily impressed by what Coa Pete did, and certainly not alone, but you know, that's a huge part of it for me, is not only was it that incredibly impressive debut, but just about anyone could have been forgiven for, okay, this is not my best night, right? Like if he had a stinker, I don't think anybody should be, at least, but I don't think anybody would be judging him particularly harshly for it because of who he was up against. And instead it was, oh, he's going to be a problem, because if he can do this against this Florida team, like, who's going to be able to stay in front of him? Because, you know, as rough a night as Alex Condon had, not looking particularly great for your boy over here, given what we did on our previous episode, but you know, that's the kind of, you know, veteran experienced front court that you would expect someone like Coa Pete to struggle against. And instead he was just dominant all night long.
Yeah, totally agree. And just to, you know, note on this freshman class to be one of the best freshman classes we've seen in a while. 18 key freshmen had scored in double figures in their debuts, which is a huge night in terms of, you know, if you're a draft fan, college basketball fan. A lot of new names too, if you're not, you know, too familiar and you're just getting into the swing of things and are one of the few people that, you know, like us, watch college basketball in November. definitely, you know, if in like the other headliner game in the Hall of Fame series, obviously BYU, Villanova, AJ's debut, one of the big three. He didn't have the best night at the line, but he definitely showed, you know, his body control, his physicality, his versatility, that a lot of people are obviously excited for. And, you know, BYU got a big win over Villanova, 71-66. And he came up with a lot of big plays that I think, you know, even as a freshman and, you know, obviously his skill set, is very encouraging to see, especially, you know, playing on a national stage in your first game and not playing, you know, a cupcake matchup, as you mentioned. So I was really happy with his debut, and he missed a few layups here and there, but he also had, you know, 3 assists, 0 turnovers, which was super encouraging too. So I was really happy with that.
Yeah, that's honestly going to be most of what I'm focusing on with AJ this year, is the playmaking and the offensive playmaking and the defense, because he's an elite shot creator. That's not something that, you know, he particularly needs work on, right? Like, that's going to be the foundation of his game. So then the question is, okay, you know, going back to the previous discussions we've had, right, of, as, you know, quote unquote, one trick ponies are getting drummed out. And to be clear, he's not that by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, the sort of concept being, okay, we know that he's got this exceptional isolation scoring game. We know that, you know, with his 6'9" frame and his body control, as you mentioned, you know, and his fluidity athletically, you know, this is someone who, even once you get to the NBA level, there aren't going to be all that many people who can guard him. And then, you know, really the questions that I have around AJ sort of stem around the notion of, again, let's say you have a bad night scoring-wise. Let's say you have an 8-for-23 game, like nothing's falling, you know, everything you're trying on the offensive end isn't working out. What else can you do, right? Because the question of what he can do on the offensive end to me is pretty clear. It's like, okay, you know, again, elite one-on-one scorer. Can he do enough playmaking? And really, it's going to be a matter of, can he do enough defensively? Because he's going to earn his way onto the floor with his offensive game, right? The question is just, can he get to a point where he doesn't even need to be a massive positive, although I think he has the tools to be a positive defender. You know, it's more of a question of how good defensively can he be? Because that's sort of going to be the difference between, okay, you know, this is a score first, score second, score third type, versus, okay, this is someone who, you know, can be a potential all-star, all-NBA type. Like, there's a, and, you know, Andrew Wiggins was not a bad number one overall pick. You know, he made an all-star game, won a title, right? If that's sort of where AJ sits, that's a perfectly fine career. But given the expectations around him, that would arguably be a bit of a disappointment if he ends up just being someone who works his way onto one all-star team, has a couple of 20-point per game seasons, but for the most part kind of struggles until he can get into a context with, you know, better players around him to the point where he's the second, third, fourth option, right? That would be, again, perfectly fine career, not what people are hoping for with AJ at this point. And I think a whole lot of that rests on what he can do defensively, because, you know, playmaking stuff offensively would be nice, but it's not like anybody's going to be unhappy with an offensive possession that ends with AJ shooting the ball, unless it's like he takes a 37 footer with 22 seconds left on the shot clock. It's like, okay, that would be a stupid shot for anyone to take, right? But that's not going to be the concern for me with AJ. It's going to be, what else can he do? Because the scoring part of his game, I'm pretty confident.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I know we're ready to close things out, but I just want to mention Caleb Wilson too. I was really encouraged by his debut. He was, let me see here. I saw a really cool stat. Yeah. He became the fifth, North Carolina freshman to score 21 points in his debut. And he just had a lot of impact all around, against Central Arkansas. Obviously not the best opponent, right? But definitely with his, rebound ability as well, and his frame, he definitely affected the game in multiple levels. And he kind of, you know, was under the radar in terms of, you know, top matchups to watch last night, but definitely just want to point him out too. And then I know we're talking about last night, but Cam Boozer is playing right now against Texas, just to shout that out. He currently has 0 points, but he has 1 rebound and 1 steal and is 0 of 2 from beyond the arc and 0 of 4 from the field. So not the best start in 9 minutes, but just wanted to point that out, that obviously this game will finish when we're done. But yeah.
Unless you're Steven, you will not be listening to this podcast before our article on Wednesday morning goes out. But suffice it to say that Caleb Wilson fans will be very happy when they see our first article go up on Wednesday morning. So be sure to check that out if you're a Caleb Wilson fan, or honestly, if you're just an NBA draft fan. There's a lot of good stuff in there. Paige, anything else before we wrap up this particular episode?
Yeah, no, I'm all good.
All right, well, that will do it for us. Thank you, as always, to my co-host, Paige Otto. You can find her on social media at @PaigeOtto_. You can find me on Blue Sky at NBA Johnson. You can find No Ceilings across various social media platforms at No Ceilings NBA, No Ceilings TV on YouTube. Again, as I mentioned, we have a special article coming out slightly after this podcast, although for the vast majority of people, you'll probably be getting those in your inbox / podcast player at a pretty similar time. So shout out to you, Steven. For everybody else, be sure to check out our article on Wednesday morning. It's a fun one. We got a lot of great stuff going up at No Ceilings this week. We have a loaded schedule. And, you know, obviously with the start of the college basketball season, there's a lot to talk about. So thank you for joining us. If you've been enjoying the show, please take the time to leave a rating and or a review in whatever podcast player you might be using. That is always much appreciated on our end. And if you have any feedback regarding the deep dives portion of the podcast, feel free to reach out to me either on Blue Sky or via email, nickaj.mba@gmail.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening.
Looking for a simpler way to explore medical weight loss options? Orderly Meds connects you online with licensed healthcare providers so you can learn about GLP-1 treatment options from home. It's convenient, straightforward, and designed to fit your lifestyle. Get started today at orderlymeds.com/podcasts. That's orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Again, orderlymeds.com/podcasts. Compounded medications are not FDA approved. Results may vary. Consult a licensed healthcare provider to determine if treatment is appropriate for you. Restrictions apply.